So we now begin the second book of Samuel, chapter 1, verse 1. And it came to pass after the death of Saul, when David was returned from the slaughter of the Amalekites, and David had abode 2 days in Ziklag. So at this time, Saul has died. David is still for a short period going to remain in the city of Ziklag. And we read in 1 Chronicles 12, verse 22, about this time. For at that time, day by day, there came to David to help him, until it was a great host, like the host of God. So now we see people coming from various places of the nation of the Israelites to help David. His followers are beginning to swell. His numbers that will be willing to fight for him and with him are increasing because Saul has died, and now the people are beginning to turn to David. Many people are. Now, not everyone, but many people are. And so his host is beginning to grow until, as Chronicles says, it's a great host like the host of God. Verse 2, And it came even to pass on the third day that, behold, a man came out of the camp from Saul with his clothes rent and earth upon his head. And so it was that he came to David and that he fell to the earth and did obeisance. So here comes a man out of the camp of Saul. A man who had been involved in, or who had at least witnessed, the battle between the Philistines and the Israelites when Saul fell. And he comes running to David, like many others have, except this man comes with a message. He comes with his clothes torn. He has earth on his head. He's in a state of mourning. And he gets attention to himself by coming to David and falls to the earth. And David said unto him, From whence comest thou? And he said unto him, Out of the camp of Israel am I escaped. So here's a man with first-hand information about what had happened between Saul and the Philistines in their battle. And David said unto him, How went the matter? I pray thee, tell me. And he answered, That the people are fled from the battle, and many of the people also are fallen and dead, and Saul and Jonathan his son are dead also. Now, the man doesn't seem to mention the other sons of Saul, but knowing the close relationship that David had with Jonathan, he does mention Jonathan. He gives David some very important news here. Saul is dead. Jonathan is dead. This means that David now has the way open to become king. It also means that he has lost his very best friend, the one that he loved the most. And so, Not only has he lost the one that he loved the most, but he also has lost the one that he feared the most, Saul. So it's certainly not hard for us to see that this is going to be very shocking news to David. This is going to be very upsetting news. This is going to be news that's going to change the course of history for this land of Israel. And David said unto the young man that told him, How knowest thou that Saul and Jonathan his son be dead? So David asked him, just how do you know this? Can you prove it? Where do you get your information? And the young man that told him said, As I happened by chance upon Mount Gilboa, behold, Saul leaned upon his spear, and lo, the chariots and horsemen followed hard after him. And when he looked behind him, he saw me and called to me, and I answered, Here am I. And he said unto me, Who art thou? And I answered him, I am an Amalekite. He said unto me again, Stand, I pray thee, upon me, and slay me, for anguish has come upon me, because my life is yet whole in me. Now this young man tells a story that's not quite the same as the story that we had related in the last chapter of 1 Samuel about Saul's death. There we had Saul being wounded, and he asked his armor bearer to slay him, and the armor bearer refused, and then we're told that Saul ran himself through with his own sword, and then his armor-bearer did likewise and killed himself. Here this man says that Saul asked him to do the job of taking his life, of taking Saul's life. And here he was, his life was yet whole in him, and he could have been wounded all right, but he's asked by Saul to do the job of taking his life. Now the young man may have been telling the truth. He may have been involved in the death of Saul, but he also may not have been telling the truth. It's not really for us to know because we have two narratives given of this story of the death of Saul, and they are not exactly the same. So in verse 10, the young man continues his story to David. "So I stood upon him and slew him, because I was sure that he could not live after that he had fallen." So here he's telling a very terrible thing that he's done. He stood upon Saul, the king, the anointed of God, the leader of Israel. He stood upon him and slew him. And it may be that as he saw that this brought a frown of disapproval upon the face of David, that he hastily adds, "I was sure that he could not live after he was fallen." Furthermore, he says, "And I took the crown that was upon his head and the bracelet that was on his arm, and it brought them hither unto my Lord." So he has proof that he was there, that he was involved with Saul, because he has the crown of Saul and the bracelet of Saul. He took them from his body and brought them here to David. Now there's a division among the Bible scholars as to whether the story of this young man was a true story or not. He may have actually done exactly what he said that he did. And here again, he may have witnessed and seen Saul, seen him ask his own armor-bearer to run him through, and his armor-bearer refused to do it. And so then this gave him the idea of telling that he was asked to do this very same thing. But regardless of whether he did it or not, it was in his heart to do it. He wanted to do it. He prided himself in taking the credit for having done this. And so if he told a lie or if he told the truth, he still in his heart was the killer of Saul. And to be such a thing in his heart then makes him such a thing literally. As a man thinketh in his heart, so is he. If we desire to put somebody to death and we think it in our heart, we want to do it, although we have never touched that person, in our heart we're a murderer. In our heart we have put him to death, and in our heart we are guilty of having done the deed. And so it is with this young man who calls himself an Amalekite. Well, we see the effect that this had on David in verse 11. "Then David took hold on his clothes and rent them, and likewise all they that were with him. And they mourned and wept and fasted until even for Saul and for Jonathan his son and for the people of the Lord and for the house of Israel, because they were fallen by the sword." So this brought great weeping, great concern, a great amount of grief upon David for the fall of Saul and for Jonathan his son. He did not rejoice in the fact that his enemy was put to death. He did not rejoice in the fact that this man who was keeping him from taking over the kingship was now gone. And certainly he didn't rejoice in the death of his friend Jonathan. And David's actions here are consistent with some of the things that his son Solomon wrote in the book of Proverbs. In Proverbs 17:5, "Whoso mocketh the poor reproacheth his maker, and he that is glad at calamity shall not be unpunished." Again, in Proverbs 24, verses 17 and 18, "Rejoice not when thine enemy falleth, and let not thine heart be glad when he stumbleth, lest the Lord see it, and it displease him, and he turn away his wrath from him." So, there we're told not to rejoice when our enemy falls, when our enemy stumbles. If we do, the Lord will see it, and it will displease the Lord. And so this was the behavior of David. He mourned. He fasted. He wept. He rent his clothes upon learning of the death of Saul and Jonathan, and upon learning upon the house of Israel having fallen before the Philistines. So we see where David's true heart was, where his allegiance was. It was with the people of God, and he in no wise desired the fall of Saul or this army of the Israelites. And so then earlier when he was marching with the Philistines, those lords, those princes of the Philistines were quite correct in saying that David would turn against them, because David's heart really wasn't with the Philistines, and he could not have gone through with the defeat of Saul with the attitude that he has here upon this occasion. Now that we've seen what great effect these tidings had upon David, how sorry he was, let's notice how David responds, the kind of reward that he gives to him that brought him the tidings. Verse 13, "And David said unto the young man that told him, Whence art thou? And he answered, I am the son of a stranger, an Amalekite." Now there are some by tradition who hold that this man who brought the news was actually the son of Doeg. Doeg being an Edomite, and the Edomites were descendants from the Amalekites. So they tried to place the two together, but we do not have any true evidence that this is so. The man was the son of a stranger, an Amalekite. He was not a true Israelite. We know that he didn't have Israel's best interest at heart. And the story that he told very likely was a fabrication. It very likely was a bold lie. However, David had no way of knowing this. At the very time and instant that the news was brought to him, everything the man said could very well have been the truth. And David said unto him, "How wast thou not afraid to stretch forth thine hand to destroy the Lord's anointed?" So here's the big question that David has for this man is, how is it that you were able to go ahead and destroy the Lord's anointed? How could you kill the king? How could you kill King Saul? How could you kill the man that the Lord had anointed to be king over Israel? Why were you not afraid to do that? This was the thing that so greatly disturbed David. And you know, whenever we come to the time of deciding as whether or not we're going to commit a sin, there should be some kind of a fear there. There should be a sense of awesome respect for the will of God, for the desire of God, so that we would not willingly and deliberately violate the things that we know God appreciates and loves and wants to have preserved. This man had no fear that he was able to stretch forth his hand and destroy the Lord's anointed. Now, he was then a man who was guilty by his own confession. There needed to be no trial. There needed to be no witnesses. This man testified against himself. If he told a lie, he still testified against himself. He still put himself in the position of being worthy of death. And so David did justly here in pronouncing the judgment upon him that he does. And David called one of the young men and said, "Go near and fall upon him." And he smote him that he died. So this man was put to death as a result of his confessing that he was the one who put Saul to death. Now, as we said, if this were not the truth, there was no way that David could have known any differently. The man confessed it with his own mouth. He took the credit. He took the blame. He took whatever went with the act of having put Saul to death. And David said unto him, "Thy blood be upon thy head, for thy mouth hath testified against thee, saying, I have slain the Lord's anointed." And so David here justifies and rectifies his action by simply saying that your mouth did the testifying. You testified against yourself when you said, "I've slain the Lord's anointed." So not only is David very distressed and grieved at the fall of Saul and Saul's army and the fall of Jonathan, but he also then takes action to put to death the man who claims to be responsible for having put Saul to death. And this act of David in placing this kind of a judgment on this Amalekite who claims to have killed Saul reemphasizes to us the heinousness of the crime of murder. Even those who would want to murder themselves. Here's a man who claims to have assisted Saul in killing himself. He claimed that Saul asked him to do this, that Saul wanted him to do it. And so he simply assisted Saul. He simply carried out Saul's desire and put him to death. And he might have very well been there and seen Saul ask his armor bearer to do this, although the armor bearer refused to do it. But he got the idea from Saul's desire to die rather than have the Philistines to capture him in the state that he was in. But this makes the crime no less a crime. He was wrong. He was assisting this person in committing suicide. And so we see then that this is definitely something that's wrong. And David took such a dim view of it that he condemned the man to death upon his own testimony. Now this young man thought that by coming to David and claiming that he was responsible for the death of Saul, and by bringing the crown and the bracelets of Saul, that he could ingratiate himself to David. He thought that David would look upon this with great favor, for he was judging David as though he were a common man of the world, a man who was not influenced and inspired by the will of God, would have wanted Saul dead. He would have rejoiced at his death. He would have rewarded someone who had claimed to have been instrumental in his death. And so that's the way this man judged David, and he misjudged David, for this was not the mind of David. This young man no doubt was not only a liar, but he was a plunderer. He came upon the body of Saul. He stole his crown and his bracelets, and then he made off with them to the presence of David, wanting to take the credit for having put Saul to death, and thinking that David then would place him upon a pedestal, that David would greatly appreciate this, and he misjudged David, for David was not that kind of a person. Well, we're going to close at that point. Till next time, this is N.C. Crouch saying, goodbye, friends.